It's not my imagination. I've got the Punk News Podcast for the week of March 20th in my back. Out there, you beautiful listeners, this is Features Editor John Gentile. You're listening to the Punk News Podcast, the best, the greatest, the most informative podcast on the entire internet, broadcasting to over 196 countries and having a potential audience of over 7 billion people. The Punk News Podcast brings you all the punkest news, news for punks, and news curtailed to fit punks just like you. That's right. The Punk News Podcast, winner of 6 Nobel Prizes, is the podcast to keep you in the know. And this week, we've got a full plate. This week, we're talking about Nazis, skinheads, skinhead Nazis, skinheads that aren't Nazis, and Fallout Boy. We're also talking about punk rock bowling, internet rumors, as well as the newest boy-slash-girl band that has just blown up the charts, Restorations, the band that all you Punk News kids love. On top of that, we've got some brand-new jams, and we've got some older jams, too. We've got a brand-new jam from Her Parents, which is going to be brought to us by Andrew Waterfield. We've got a reading selection by Eugene Robinson of Oxbow, where he reads a passage about how he likes to beat people up. That's at the end, so be sure to stick around for that. And I'm going to introduce the very first song today. As some of you Punk News Podcast listeners might know, today is March 20th. March 20th is a very special day because it is the birthday of Lee Scratch Perry. As I'm sure you know, Lee Scratch Perry is an incredibly important person in music mythology slash history. Not only is he a legendary reggae producer who produced music for Bob Marley, he produced music for Junior Mervin, Dillinger, Junior Biles, Peter Tosh, Ranking Joe, Third Experience. He produced music for tons and tons of fantastic reggae artists. He basically invented the concept of dub, or was very important in creating dub, and you could even argue that he invented the concept of remix. It's his 77th birthday, so today I'm going to play one of my favorite later day Lee Perry tracks. It's from an album from 2004 called Panic in Babylon on Narnak Records. It's a phenomenal record produced by Lee Perry as well as DJ StarTech. And this track is called I Am a Psychiatrist. Happy birthday, Lee Scratch Perry, your 77th birthday. And here's the 77 more good years from the Mighty Upsetter. This track is called I Am a Psychiatrist, out on Narnak Records.
Hit. Many moods, so many moods. I'm a psychiatrist. I'm a psychiatrist. I am a doctor. I'm a soul. I'm a psychiatrist. I am a doctor. I'm a soul reactor. I bless my name in the rain. I bless my name and bless my aim. Psychiatrist, I heal brain. I'm a psychiatrist, I heal good aim. I am a psychiatrist, from whence I came. Many moons, many moons, many moons, many moons.
Many moons.
Heal your pain, bless your brain, bless your name from whence you came. I'm a psychiatrist.
Tonight's program with me is the respected industry leader in nanosurgical design development and cross-DNA transfer, Dr. Chris Moran, MD, PhD, ODB. Dr. Moran has recently returned from spending several years in the remote African village of Lubumbashi, Zaire, and has just published his seventh book on personal self-development, I'm Okay, You Need Some Real Self-Improvement. Chris, how you doing?
Konnichiwa, bitches.
Fair enough. And with me is the famed Armando Olivas. Armando, the revolutionary and avant-garde mixed media artist who has created such thought-provoking exhibits as the curious Carl Winslow descending down the staircase in the nude. He's also created Head of Lettuce Drenched in Blood and his most controversial and pièce de résistance, which is simply a cow painted orange and pink, and it is called Rutherford B. Hazed. Armando was just recently released from a Bulgarian jail for obscenity related to the aforementioned depiction. Armando, how are you doing tonight?
I'm doing good. Celebrating another day of freedom by watching the Family Matters episode where Carl and Steve compete on American Gladiators. Great times.
Well, we're all so happy that you're out and able to create some more great art. That's great. And of course, behind the boards, keeping this type shit running even tighter, is the producer and DJ sound guy Nairman, who, unbeknownst to most people, was in a group with Russell Simmons and Daryl McDaniel prior to Run DMC. Of course, you guys know that group was called Run DMC Nairman. Sound guy Nairman, hit us with a juicy beat. Naaman, that was a sweet beat. Thanks very much. So let's get tonight's podcast started. As I'm sure a lot of the Punk News people know, there was recently, just today, which is the 20th of March, a ruckus at a drop, or actually, I think it happened last night. There's a ruckus at a Dropkick Murphys concert. What happened was Dropkick Murphys was doing their AC/DC cover, TNT, which they've been doing for probably about 15 years now. And this guy gets on stage and reportedly does a Sieg Heil Nazi salute. What happens next is, according to Rock's Off website, Dropkick's singer slash bassist Kevin Casey noticed the neo-Nazi and ran over to the guy, smashed him in the face, took off his bass and hit him with that, and then jumped on him, and all-out chaos ensued. We can only assume from our vantage point that said Nazi got his ass kicked. About 30 seconds later, Ken emerged from the pile-off with his shirt torn and made his way back to the front stage. You can kind of see that on the Punk News website. So let me, fellas, I mean, do you think this kid was doing a Sieg Heil, or was he just excited? Were they right to beat him up, or is violence an answer to, I guess, things being said that you don't want to be said? Go ahead. What do you guys got to say?
I mean, I watched part of the video, and I really couldn't see much. But as far as things go, I feel like if Ken Casey thought he saw someone Sieg Heiling, you know, he would handle the situation appropriately. If anything, I feel like if he had made a mistake, he would have, like, punched the guy and realized it, and then kind of been like, whoa, my bad, I don't know, here, I'll give you a few tickets for life. But that doesn't seem to be the case. And I've gone to a couple of, you know, everyone's had this case. You go to a punk show, depending on who the band is playing, there's a Nazi, you know, skinhead there or whatever from time to time. So maybe there was somebody there. Who knows?
You know, I gotta say, I've been to, I think, Armando, you're down in Southern California, right? I think it depends where you live, because I've been to a lot of hard, like a lot of tough, rough and tough punk concerts in the East Bay, well, San Francisco Bay Area, as well as Philadelphia, D.C., and New York. And I've never seen, like, a Nazi punk. Like, do you see Nazi punk still? I thought that, like, faded in, like, 1984.
Nah, I still see them from time to time. And interestingly enough, the area of Southern California that I live in is it's called the Inland Empire. And although it's predominantly, dominated by Mexican and Latinos, the area got its name because this used to be a very big stronghold for the KKK. So, you know, it was originally the Inland Empire of the Ku Klux Klan. So there's a fair amount of, Nazis and Klansmen, or at least people with relation to that those organizations, who live out here. And so for every now and again, I want to say more so for like the 80s, like punk bands that, you know, still play, like, you see that happen. Like every time you see Fear, there's a couple of those guys out here.
Really?
Yeah.
I would think that any concert they would go to, they would get like their ass kicked.
Usually what ends up happening is, sometimes they get their asses handed to them, but a lot of times they come in like big groups and they're all big guys, and so they start just causing a ruckus, and then the show will get canceled or whatever.
Wow.
You know, like, yeah.
Chris, what do you think?
Well, I think the guy was Sieg Heiling, and you know, I'm not a bro beat down kind of guy, but in all honesty, I don't have an issue with Ken beating this guy down. And the reason for that is it's simple. You know, as much as everyone wants to crack jokes on Dropkick Murphys, I've done my share of it. I'm actually not even a big, you know, everything past, I'd say, really do or die, I'm not a big fan of. I loved Mike McColgan, still love him. So that aside, I also respect them. I mean, they've taken their band and turned it into, frankly, almost an industry, and he's very protective of it, and I understand that. And you know, it's hard enough for a band like them with, you know, their, I guess you'd say, imagery and some of the people they draw to you know, when they're starting to get into the major culture that they are now, like being on the Today Show and things like that, they have to protect that image. And you know, there's people who will see them and automatically, if they're walking on the street, think those guys are Nazis, because you know, if they're wearing a Scully cap or, you know, the plaid shirts with, you know, rolled up jeans or whatever. And he's protective of that. I don't see violence as always being a legitimate means of, you know, dealing with issues, but it's in the context of a punk rock show, and he did, that guy did something stupid. Ken defended it. And I want to make another point too, because a lot of the commenters were bringing up the old Al Barr thing, you know, with Al Barr saying the word faggot and people getting pissed off. You know, my thought about that, because I think it kind of relates to this, because people see that as like a continuation of their attitude. Watch Louis C.K.'s special. I believe it's Chewed Up. I think that was the one where he did it, or Live at the Beacon. It's one of the two. He does this whole bit about that word, and it's brilliant. It summarizes kind of people's take on that word. So, long story short, it's one of those words that's kind of, I think, is kind of morphed into something else, and I think people kind of take it the wrong way sometimes, and you know, so. Anybody who is jumping all over him for that, just watch Louis C.K.'s special, and I think you will definitely agree.
I haven't seen the bit, but going back to what you said about the whole Al Barr thing, now, I know, well, Al Barr apologized, but two, the other thing I want to focus on is that even though I don't approve of that word and I would never use the word, it's still popularly used in our current, you know, lexicon, at least in the United States, and not really seen as a bad thing. A big prominent example is, you know, like calling stuff gay, which, like I said, I don't do, I don't like. But if you watch like mainstream movies, like either The Hangover or 40-Year-Old Virgin, like they toss those words around. So I think part of it is that, at least as far as the whole culture in the States is concerned, it's just, it has, not everyone's grasped the concept or agrees that it's necessarily a bad thing, you know? So that's why I can't say that's why I feel like you can't really compare the whole Al Barr and then this Nazi thing.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not comparing them in that sense.
Oh, I know you're not. I'm talking about the commenters.
I think people see this view of the band in a certain negative light, and I think there are two issues that were, I think, are being directed in the wrong way.
I guess I've got a couple of things. I'll tell you, we're really opening up a lot to talk about in this thing. With regards to Al Barr, I'm not going to say what he said was right. Obviously, it was something that's not nice to say, he probably shouldn't have said, but think of all the things that you have said when you weren't being recorded. What if you were held to task for every stupid thing you said when you were 13, when you were 14, when you were 15? When people are in the media, when they say things when they're immature, sometimes it comes back to haunt them, even if they don't mean that, like 5, 6, 10 years later on down the line, and they realize it was an immature, foolish thing to say. Now, I'm not taking a stance on the Al Barr thing. I'm just saying is, think for yourself is, what if when something stupid you said when you were 13, what if that came back to haunt you when you were 30, you know, or 40 even? I mean, Dropkick Murphys around so like, what, 96? So that's almost 20 years.
Yep.
Yeah.
Now with regards to this specific thing is, I will say that, well, it's slightly muddied up, but I will say that violence is never an acceptable reproach to unwanted speech. Just because someone says something, the most vile thing you can think of, does not mean that you should hit them. I think you should never hit somebody for saying something distasteful, immature, or foul. And that's what our country's founded upon, freedom of speech. And that's what makes our country so great, is because you can say what you want to say without fear of reprisal or being beat up, that we have the ability to investigate interesting ideas, you know, things that might be more out there than would be, I guess, in other more restrictive countries. So just if someone says, you know, if someone says how great they think it is being a Nazi or whatever, it is never okay to hit them. Because take it from the other perspective, what if somebody says, I think anarchy is the greatest thing in the world, and I think the government should crumble. Well, what if a really conservative guy punched him? Would any of our punk rocker friends say that's okay? No, not a single one. But it's the same exact thing. Now, obviously, I think it's more morally wrong to say Nazi things than say anarchy is great, but that's just my perspective. So, you can't place boundaries on speech. That's what I'm saying. What I will say is, though, the problem, what muddies this up a little bit, is he was on the stage, you know?
Yeah.
So, really, instead of beating the guy up, he should have, you know, had the bouncer just kick him out, is what he should have done. But I can understand, in the heat of the moment, when things are going crazy, you're not thinking. And I don't think anybody was really thinking in the situation. But I don't think our readers, well, I don't think people should say, yeah, he was a Nazi, it's good he got beat up. No, because he was expressing his thought, no matter how foul it was, it is not good that he got beat up. In fact, it's terrible that he got beat up, because that's a thin line to draw before the boundaries of okay things to beat people up with get smaller and smaller and smaller, and before you know it, there's only one train of thought that you can think of, or you'll be fear of reprisal. So that's what I'm saying. I don't blame Dropkick Murphys for beating this guy up, because they're on the show, this guy's on stage, and he throws a Sig Heil, which is stupid. So was it bad for them to do it? No. Should they have done it? No, they probably should have got the bouncer to kick him out. That's my opinion. And that's what makes this country great. I can voice my opinion without getting beat up by people. So.
John, it's not like the guy was on the street and proclaiming this. I mean, it was – the stage is more or less there.
Okay, but Chris, what if you got up there and said, boy, I love Mickey Mouse. Would it be okay for people to beat him up?
No.
Okay, so the only difference is they're not beating him up because he's on stage. They're beating him up because he's expressing an opinion, no matter how foul it might be. So that's why it's not okay to beat him up.
Mickey Mouse wasn't responsible for the almost entire extermination of a people.
Doesn't matter. You can't make those qualitative statements with regards to it. What if I got up there and I said, oh, I think Che Guevara's a great guy. Is it okay to beat me up? Che Guevara killed a lot of people. What if I got up there and say, boy, I think Bill Clinton's a great guy. Bill Clinton killed a lot of people during Desert Storm.
The way I view it is I compare it to this. If somebody, for example, I was standing in my yard or something like that with like a megaphone, and I was talking into it, and somebody grabbed it and started yelling shit into it. I kind of view that the same here, is this was their stage, if you will, their medium for presenting themselves.
But you've changed your position now. Now you're saying they're beating him up not for what he's saying, but for taking their platform from them.
For using their platform to express views that they disagreed with. It's not like the guy was in the middle.
But what if they don't like Mickey Mouse and he gets up there and takes their platform and says Mickey Mouse is great? Can they beat him up then?
If they had very big issues with Mickey Mouse, maybe he'd raped people. Yeah, maybe they could.
Okay, what if he got up there and said Bill Clinton is great?
Again, you're interrupting into their medium for expression.
But so your position is that it's not what he said, it's because he took their platform from them.
When you enter into someone's platform, to me, and I'm John, you know the law way better than I do, so I'm not going to go down that road, but you are using their platform to spread your negative thought.
So you're saying they're not beating him up because of what he said, but because they took their platform from them.
It's a combination of they disagreed with what he was using their platform to do.
So it's okay to beat him up?
No, I don't disagree. I don't agree with violence, but I mean, I understand why he did it.
Well, I understand why he did it too, but the question is, is it the morally right thing for him to do, or the socially responsible thing for him to do to beat him up?
No, it's not. I mean, of course, I know violence.
What's the question?
Violence isn't right, but I mean, I don't hold it against him.
Well, neither do I. I think I might have done the same thing. But the question is not what would you have done. The question is, what is really the morally correct thing to do?
Well, of course, because you know, hitting somebody and beating on somebody is against the law, which actually I'm wondering if this guy's going to try to press charges. That'll be
honestly
a real interesting
case. Well, that would be very interesting, and he probably will. Well, who knows? I mean, people are stupid. I think Armando wanted to say something. Armando, what did you want to say?
Well, I was going to say, like, you know, at the end of the day, you were right. Like, even though he's a Nazi, he still has the right to say whatever he wants, you know. In retrospect, you know, Ken Casey shouldn't have gone as far as he did. He could have just easily have just given him, like, a punch upside the head and then pointed to a bouncer, and you know, like, because if you're on a stage in a band at a club that big and you're performing, you point to a bouncer and then point to some guy and they see you, they're gonna know, oh, get this guy out of here. Like, he didn't have to go as far as he did, you know. But
yeah, well, speaking of Nazi skinheads and skinheads that aren't Nazis,
And people just who are bald.
And people who are just bald. Yeah. How often is it you think a bald punk is just that people say he's a skinhead when he's just a bald punk? But yeah. What happens is InstaFest, which was set to take place on March 30th, which is a week and a half away, just down the street from Armando, was canceled. Here's the reason the promoter said it was canceled. Oh, the bands at InstaFest were supposed to be Old Firm Casuals, which has Lars Fredriksson from Rancid in it, Channel 3, The Insiders, and a few other bands. Here's what the promoter said why it was canceled. It was kind of a ambiguous statement. The promoter said, after 6 months of planning, unfortunately, InstaFest will be canceled. The Echo, which is the venue, at the last minute realized that some of the bands playing InstaFest had band members and fans they referred to as, quote, the skinhead element, and they do not want those type in the establishment. They now have decided to cancel this show 2 weeks before it was meant to happen. The lack of communication and unprofessionalism is beyond words. So my question is this, do you think they're saying they're skinheads, or do you think they're saying they're Nazi skinheads?
I think they're saying Nazi skinheads. And the reason why I say this, and part of this I actually noticed in the LA Weekly article when I read it, and part of it also because I got invited to the event, is that on that same day, there's a Ska Mania event where Earl Dunkley, who's an old like Ska reggae artist from Jamaica, is performing that same day. So they're going to have skinheads there regardless, you know, traditional skinheads at least for that show, just a different vibe. So I really do think that they just assume like skinheads, traditional or not, are probably just Nazis, or at least in this situation, they would think, oh, punk Nazi. So that's what I think they were fearful of, you know, because at the end of the day, like, I was wondering, you know, for me, I was wondering, why are both these shows going on the same day? I feel like they'd be competing with each other at the technically the same venue, because the Echo is technically two venues, the Echo and the Echoplex. They're literally, like, right by each other, practically.
I don't, but do you think, like, Oi crosses over with, like, ska music, like, Jamaican ska and first-generation ska, or second
generation? As far as the traditional skinheads out here, yes. Really? Yes, at least in Southern California, a lot of people who are into that kind of stuff, you know, Derek Morgan, you know, Alton Ellis, all that stuff, they're also into, like, Coxbar and all that. Like, it maybe in other regions it's not the same, but in here it is. It's like, because California in itself is a huge melting pot.
Man, I don't know anything about punk rock, apparently. I really don't.
You don't.
Chris, what do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I agree. I mean, it's you know, they're definitely, you know, it's walking a thin line when you get involved with that stuff. But I you know, Armando's point he brought up kind of intrigues me, though, with the fact that there is a, you know, a conflicting event going on, and it makes the whole thing sound a little more devious as to what the real reasons are.
Oh, I believe him. I think they are canceling because they think a bunch of Nazis are going to show up. Because, like these punk gangs, which I think are, like, the most ridiculous thing in the world, like, they do show up as gangs, like 30 guys or 40 guys. And so somebody probably leaked a word say, oh, the West Side sewer rats are going to be at the gig. We better not have it because they'll start fights or whatever. But I guess my real question is what is a skinhead? I mean, I know that, like, I know a skinhead is a guy that shaves his head and wears suspenders and tight jeans and combat boots. But, I mean, like, what makes somebody a skinhead?
Do you want the history of it?
Yeah, why not?
Well, it started in England in like the 60s. They were like working class basically, and they would, you know, they would keep their heads closely shaven. And as Armando mentioned, there is a very tight. How do I say it? They are very closely connected to that whole rude boy scene from Jamaica and you know, ska music and so forth. So it originally did not start as a racist thing at all. However, go ahead, Armando.
Well, I was gonna say the reason why they even like became the Boneheads, which is normally what the name is given to like the skinheads who are racist, is that the whole National Front was trying to recruit skinheads into their organization. You know, back in the day. And for those of you who don't know, the National Front is a very, like, nationalist, like, racist organization out in England, which I believe still exists to this day, but not nearly as strong of an impact as it used to have, you know? And so they're very against, you know, immigration and that kind of stuff. And so that's kind of how that, like, separate racist sect broke out.
But, I mean, not talking about racist skinheads, like, your non-racist Oi skinheads. Like, like, what do they believe, or like, what's their goal, or what unites them? Like, what makes you a skinhead?
Power.
Like a straight edge guy, he doesn't do drugs, so he's straight edge. You know?
I think what it is beyond the music is pop. I don't really know, because I feel like originally it started as a working class thing, but now I don't think that's really the tying factor. Maybe a love of sports and beer and just looking good in a Fred Perry. I'm not really sure these days.
I will say, like, you know how, like, skinheads, like, for the past literally like 30 years, they're like, you know, not all skinheads are racist, but I gotta say, it's like with the Charlie Chaplin mustache and Hitler, like, you know, if a certain hairstyle becomes known for being associated with evil, even if you had it first and even if it looks cool, you just got to let it go. You just got to, you know, stop, change it from being a skinhead to be, you know, like, I don't know, a pompadour or something. It's like,
you know what? Most of them, like, even, I mean, most of them just sport like a buzz cut. So, I mean,
why though? Like, what's important about the haircut? I mean, it's so closely, like, the clothing and hair is so associated with Nazis. Even if it's completely wrong, that's what your average person thinks. So why, like, is it really worth the fight? Is that look
But half the stuff they wear doesn't normally get, at least like the traditional skins that I know and hang out with, doesn't even really, the boneheads don't wear, because a lot of them wear Fred Perry and Ben Sherman and Merck, you know, like those brands of clothing. So they wear a lot of button downs and polos and stuff, but the boneheads, it's usually just like a wife beater or, you know, or like a plain t-shirt and jeans. So usually the biggest factor between the two is just how well-dressed one is compared to the other. So
I don't think most people know that. I don't even think I would know that, you know?
Well, because, like, I have friends, like, you know, who are, you know, skinheads or even just, like, friends who just, like, hang out with them. You know, I hang out with some, too, and I see them at shows, and it's like...
Are you a skinhead? Are you a secret skinhead?
I'm not a secret skinhead. I got myself a nice hairstyle right now.
You do have a nice hairstyle.
Yeah. You know, I could never be a skinhead just because I don't look good with a shaved head.
Chris, could you ever be a skinhead? Can you envision yourself as a skinhead? Oi, oi, oi.
No, I've got 3 pairs of Docs, and I've got some Fred Perry shit, but no. I don't like the music. I mean, I like some Oi, but... I like Japanese Oi. If you never listen to Cobra, listen to Cobra. Good band.
You know what? You could still be a skinhead just particularly only listen to ska and reggae. You can do it.
But see, I'm you know, I'd be if I was ever a skinhead, I'd be like more like the grown up Edward Norton. You know, like, well, what is it that old racist guy says in American History X? He's like, oh, you got over that shaved head shit years ago.
Well, speaking of people getting over shit, Fall Out Boy just released their first comeback album, the new cover. The album is called Fall Out Boy Save Rock and Roll. I find the cover particularly interesting. It shows what looks like to be two Tibetan youths. I'm guessing they're Tibetan, but I'm not sure. One in traditional Tibetan garb and one in vaguely punkish garb holding hands, and the one's blowing out cigarette smoke. I gotta say, I'm not a fan of Fall Out Boy, but I really like this cover. What do you guys think of the cover? Are you excited for the new Fall Out Boy album?
The cover looks like it might be the only interesting thing about the album, but that's also because I'm not a Fall Out Boy fan.
Yeah. What does the cover say to you guys? See, I like this cover because it can say any number of things.
It says Fall Out Boy doesn't know anything about Tibet.
Well, you know what's funny is you know, we've had all these stories about skinheads, and now we have a Fall Out Boy story. Eh? Well, you guys get the joke?
No, I don't.
Oh, well, what's his name? Pete Wentz used to be in a skinhead band.
Oh, that's right, Arm Angels. Yeah. And they got accused of being skinheads or something.
Wait, was it them or was it Race Traitor? I thought it was Race Traitor.
It was Race Traitor, I think.
Well, on the subject of skinheads, both of these kids in this cover have shaved heads.
These kids are genuine skinheads. These are kids that are the real deal.
You can't see it in the artwork, but they're wearing Doc Martens.
even the kid in the garb.
Yeah.
I think that's the best possible way to wrap up that conversation, I gotta say. So we're gonna have a track from Andrew Waterfield.
All right, this is Punk News editor Andy Waterfield. I've got a track for you this week from a London-based band by the name of Her Parents. They've just signed for Alco Pop Records, who are going to be putting out their second album, Happy Birthday, on the 13th of May. This track's taken from that album. It's available for a free download from the Alco Pop SoundCloud page, so if you like it, go and check it out there. And it's called Why Don't You Just Fuck Off? So yeah, this is Her Parents with Why Don't You Just Fuck Off? Have a good week.
And we are back for the second half of the Punk News Podcast. Now we're done talking about skinheads, so we're going to talk about, I guess, more normal punk rock. Actually, now we got a bummer story coming up later on. But first, Punk Rock Bowling has announced the club lineup. The club shows performing at Punk Rock Bowling are going to be Me First and the Gimme Gimmies, Punk News perennial favorites, the Lawrence Arms, Andrew Jackson Jihad, Strung Out 7 Seconds, and a whole lot of other bands. Are you guys excited for Punk Rock Bowling? Are you guys going to go? Are you excited for any of these club shows? I got to say, tickets are pretty cheap, man. $15 for a club show with like 5 bands on it? That's pretty cheap.
Dude, Pulley is playing.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah, but nobody cares about Pulley.
Chris Moran cares about Pulley.
Dude. Okay, you have to understand, for us, Pulley has had about 4 or 5 reunion shows like in the past year, and no one has cared. They played a free show at a 250 cap venue and barely got 100 people. And I was like, okay, no offense to Pulley, I just don't know if they have the magic anymore.
I would kill to see Pulley again, man.
You know what? When a time machine is invented, you can go back in time and see all the times I've seen Pulley.
I've seen him like 5 or 6 times.
Recently.
Oh, is it not that good anymore?
Well, if you can't sell out a free show, there's a reason why.
The business is going to be there. Speaking of skinhead bands,
skinhead, oi, oi, oi.
I will say there's a lot of really cool old school punk rock bands going to be there. There's TSOL is going to be there, Angry Samoans, MDC, which is phenomenal. I don't know if any of you guys like MDC, but MDC was one of the first really radical punk rock bands, and there's some wild dudes. Also, the Gears are going to be there, which are a punk rock band that Tom kind of forgot were one of the first wave punk rock bands from like 77, 78 in Southern California, as well as Shattered Faith, which almost nobody knows about. And honestly, I mean, they're not great, but it would be cool to see them. But they were like one of the first wave hardcore bands right after Middle Class and Black Flag.
Yeah, well, I mean, the reason why a lot of those bands are playing is just because, you know, they're from Southern California. A lot of Southern California punk bands tend to play Punk Rock Bowling every year. And I guess just the BYO guys just have that, you know, like, is they're just friends of all those dudes, so they usually have a way of convincing them.
Wanda Jackson's going to be there, too. I don't know if people know who Wanda Jackson is. She's only punk rock, and that, like, the greaser people have adopted her. But she's literally, like, 75. She's an incredibly famous and fairly prolific rockabilly guitar player and singer who was like rockabilly back in the 50s when it was like actually a real thing, which is kind of cool. I saw her once in Santa Cruz and she was cool. I mean,
she plays out here all the time.
Oh, really?
Yeah, dude, like all the like rockabilly, psychobilly dudes come out all the time. I've probably passed up like enough like Wanda Jackson shows like to make some people like who don't live out here like pissed off. Like, and it's not that she's bad. She's good. I've seen her twice, but like, it's like one of those times you've seen her once, you've seen her 1,000 times, and you don't really need to see her again.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Like same set more or less every time.
Yeah, you know, but going, you know, like these club shows are really good. My one complaint though is that why would you put the Lawrence Arms, Strung Out, and Andrew Jackson Jihad all on the same day at separate venues? Like that is like the worst idea ever.
I gotta say, I'm loving Sunday, man. For $15, you can see Wanda Jackson, MDC, TSOL, and Angry Samoans. That's a deal, if you ask me. Or are those different venues?
They're different venues.
Oh, I see. And they're $15 each, right?
Yeah, I'm actually trying to figure out who's playing, because even though they're all listed together, they're different shows. Like for example, Sunday, okay, like it's 7 Seconds, TSOL, and Angry Samoans playing one show. Manic Hispanic and then a bunch of other random bands playing another. What's it called? MDC, Verbal Abuse, In Defense playing another one. Me First and the Gimme Gimmies and Pulley playing another. And then Wanda Jackson and the Water Tower Bucket Boys and Steve Soto playing another. So there's like 5 shows on Sunday.
Yeah.
This is just confusing.
Well, the way it's set up at Punk Rock Bowling is they have the 3 festival. I've been twice. They have 3 festival shows that take place in downtown, downtown Las Vegas. And then after, because the shows for that usually end around 9 or 10, because it starts pretty early. And then they have the club shows going from about like 10 or 11 until like 2 a.m. or whatever. But the way it's centered is that It's pretty much in the Fremont area, so that literally the festival is within walking distance from all these clubs, and so all it's kind of set up like Fest. So you kind of just like pick your venue where you want to go.
See, that's not the I've been to it three times, and this is all just weird and new. It's not the way it used to be, and I don't like it.
Oh, it's just I guess it's because it's gotten really big, and then people were complaining. Well, I'm in Vegas, but I don't really want to gamble. What else can I do with myself? So like, hey, let's give everybody punk shows to go to afterwards.
Yeah, I usually would just go to, like, see me first in the Gimme Gimmes and then go play blackjack the rest of the time.
Chris, are you good at blackjack?
I'm not bad.
I only ever play the slot machines and I always lose.
Although, I found we bowled, too. I mean, I think we only advanced once. We were pretty terrible.
Who'd you play?
We played American Steel one time.
Who's we?
Me, Adam, Justin... And Aubin 1 year, and then me, Adam, Rich. No, me, Rich, Justin, and I think Heisel another year. And then the other year, I don't remember. I think it was like me and Adam and Aubin and Rich again or something like that.
We need to bring back a Punk News bowling team.
I don't know if we still have our reserve. We used to always have a slot reserved for us. I don't know if we still do or not. But the best time was when we did Nothington one. We played Nothington one time, but American Steel was funny because we were all drinking all night, and it was like six of us, myself, I think Adam and Justin, and then Rory from American Steel were just hungover the entire time and had to bowl at like 10 in the morning. It was the worst, but also the best.
Yeah.
Are either you guys going to punk rock bowling?
No. I might go just because it's like a 3.5 hour drive for me, but I'd really probably only go for either a club show or I'd go to see Flag.
Damn straight. I actually might make this flight out just to see Flag, but also the Damned and Subhumans as a bonus. I really, really, really want to see Flag. So I seriously might fly out for this just to see Flag. Even though the set's only going to be like 16 minutes probably, it's going to be the most amazing 16 minutes ever.
It'll be longer than 16 minutes because I remember I saw it, the first incarnation of Flag in 2011.
Yeah, when you got to see it.
Yeah. No, where it was Chuck, Keith, Bill, and then Steven before like they added Dez and stuff.
Yeah.
And they played at the Golden Voice 30 with Descendants, and then I think it was the Dickies and the Vandals. And so like they played the whole Nervous Breakdown EP from beginning to end. So I mean, even if they just did that, like I feel like they're going to obviously do more than that, but that alone was like a good 10-12 minutes. So I feel like they'll play at least half an hour.
The rumor is that they're going to play basically a lot of the early stuff, a lot of Damaged stuff. Because actually, Keith wrote the lyrics for a lot of the Damaged stuff, which goes all the way back to the Everything Went Black demos. Keith's doing some Damaged songs. And the rumor is they might even do some My War era stuff. So Keith doing My War would be incredible. I mean, it would be so amazing.
Yeah.
No one can sing My War except for Henry.
Well, I don't know, man, because Chuck Dukowski's band, Chuck Dukowski Sextet, has Chuck Dukowski's wife, Laura Norton, doing My War, and it's a pretty cool version, I gotta say.
What if Hank just walked out and like did a song with him?
That'd be amazing. That would be so amazing. I don't think he will, though.
No, he's not.
Yeah. Do you have inside information, Armando?
No, Henry just doesn't – I feel like – he's just not one for nostalgia in that sense. I feel like he's kind of
yeah.
You know,
he's a quirky guy though. You never know, man. He might see all this and be like, "Man, I'd like to do a song real fast."
Chris, you saw the West Memphis 3 tour. That was pretty incredible.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah, that was fucking phenomenal. And then, you know, because he had in DC, he had Ian MacKaye come out and sing Rise Above with him. I mean, that's nostalgia right there.
That's wild. In San Francisco, we had Jello do Chalice. Again, just so the Punk News listeners know, the West Memphis 3 is when the West Memphis 3 fellows were still in jail. Henry Rollins went on a tour with Mother Superior, that's his backing band, to raise money for DNA testing. And Keith Morse came out and did about 10 Black Flag songs, and then Henry came out and did about 20 Black Flag songs, and it was amazing. That was 2003, I think.
That record was epic too. They did.
That is a good record. Iggy Pop, Tom Araya, Ice-T, Dean Ween, Keith Morse.
Ice-T doing Cop Killer is just fucking awesome.
Police Story.
Police Story. Yeah.
I was like, Ice-T doing Cop Killer. You're like, didn't you write that song? It's not that unheard of.
Story. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, like on that album, everybody does Black Flag song, because Ice-T does his own.
He's like, I'm Ice-T, I don't care.
So anyway, from happier things to sadder things, well, depending on how you look at it, is hardcore act Gaza has broken up. They gave a pretty cryptic reason why they're breaking up. They just said, Gaza is no longer a band. A big thank you to anyone that has supported us. Some of us will continue to make music together. This follows, I guess, a scandal is the word, or I don't know how you want to call it, but someone on the internet posted a lengthy blog post saying one of the fellows of Gaza sexually assaulted her. We're not going to talk about whether or not that actually did happen or not, but what I do find interesting is more and more bands are being influenced and directed by social media. Do you guys think this is a new phenomenon, or is this just something that existed before in the term of this guy telling that guy, telling that guy, telling this guy?
It's just a wider audience to hear it, that's all.
Yeah, you know, just crisp, boom, knock it out.
The medium's changed, that's all. It's like, you know, it used to be zines. Yep, zines, or even you have more, I think, more responsibility in zines, unless it's something you're making out of your, like, you know, out of your home printer. But with the internet, it's like, you can post whatever, and, you know, there's still not a lot of liability.
Yeah, plus you can easily delete something that you've posted, you know, rather than, like, if you put out a zine, there's no one's going to delete this copy of something I wrote, you know, that you wrote that I own.
I do think that social media is more powerful that way, because honestly, like, if it was in a, like, zines do not have the wider distribution of the, like, the internet is insane in that, like, a blog post can be distributed worldwide within, like, a half hour. Yeah. Whereas a zine, if somebody makes a zine in, say, Las Vegas, it might never make its way out of Las Vegas. So I do think social media is more powerful towards bands than zines ever were.
Oh, yeah.
I would also say is I do find this unfortunate in the punk rock world, and I'm not commenting on the God situation at all, but to me, the punk rock community, and you guys can disagree with me, seems to have a witch hunt mentality in that if somebody gets accused of something, people will be like, burn this guy to stake, he's a horrible person,
yep.
And we don't even know if he did that or not. Because the fact of the matter is, people do lie sometimes. Not all the time, but sometimes people do lie, and innocent people really get burned for something they didn't do. That scares me, although I don't know if there's a solution for that with regards to social media. What do you guys think?
I agree. I mean, yeah, it's everyone. People who, you know, in the punk scene or into punk or whatever, they're obviously tend to be more of a liberal nature. And then when you're more of a liberal nature, you tend to, you know, be very, you know, anti anything that's sexist or obviously when you get into issues with rape, then, you know, you get into some. I don't want to generalize it as sexism, but they're closely tied, where automatically, you know, the woman has not done anything wrong if she says she was if someone says a woman was raped, she was raped. Not even the woman herself saying she was raped, but if somebody says the woman was raped, then if you in any way tend to disagree with that statement, obviously you're wrong and a bad person and you know, stones are cast upon you. So I think absolutely. But, you know, until I keep an open mind until I see, you know, direct accusations or somebody has, you know, specifically pressed charges, then I withhold judgment. And that's final note. The only reason I'm that cautious because I have a very, I have a friend who was wrongly accused of rape and was incarcerated for it, well, held in a jail for several months until she finally recanted and admitted that the whole thing was fucking made up, and it really fucked his life up. So, I'm not one to just jump on the witch hunt.
Yeah, no, and I get why you're saying, but I also get why people in the punk community tend to do that, and that's I think we all know this. It's just because of how much, like, as far as, like, the you know mainstream society is, you know, if you're raped, you know people often don't come out to help you. There's not really much of a network out there. It's very hard to report it and even have something done. Now, do I necessarily think, like, the super hardcore witch hunt is what should be done? Not necessarily, but I mean, I get it.
Well, you know, Armando, you're right. And in a way, this is sort of a counter-reaction to mainstream society. That poor girl in the Steubenville rape case is, like, on the news, they were naming her, but not naming the three kids that raped her, you know? And so there is a pervasive idea in society still that if the girl got raped, right now, society, some people in society have a view that if a girl gets raped, she was, quote, asking for it, which we know is not true. But that is an idea people have, I guess, in certain parts of the country still. And so I guess punk rock does react against that quite heavily. So you can commend punk rock as a thing, I guess, for that, if you will.
Yeah. Speaking of that whole situation, the one thing that's really astounded me is how much a lot of the news coverage is like, oh, those poor boys and like their careers and like,
yeah,
oh,
screw them. You know what I mean?
Yeah, it's like they knew what they were doing. Like I saw the YouTube video that they posted. Like they joked about it for 10 minutes, and one guy even said, like, dude, like this is messed up. Like, what if that was your sister? And then one of the guys was even like, I wouldn't care. And it's like, but then all of a sudden he's sorry when he gets caught. It's like,
yeah, come
on,
yeah.
You live tweeted the thing, you posted it on Facebook, you know, you took pictures, you did a 10-minute YouTube video. Like the guy was like cracking joke after jokes, you know, he was like saying, you know, she's deader than this person in that movie or whatever. It's like, come on now, dude. Like, and I think Henry Rollins said it best. He's like, you know, like that, you know, like, what's unfortunate is like the poor girl is the one serving the life sentence is that girl, which is like, boom.
But actually, Henry Rollins made an interesting argument too. And I'm glad we made our way into this. Henry Rollins also said, some people are mad that they only got what, 5 or 10 years. And Henry Rollins says, is 10 years going to be any different to them than say 30 years? Like, are they going to learn that what they did bad? It was in 30 years and say 10 or 5 years. So that's something to think about too. And I guess I'm on the fence with regard to that. Question. The question being is, when young people do these horrible things, what's the correct way to combat that after the damage? Well, before the damage is done, such, you know, education, but also after the damage is done. Like, is a longer jail sentence appropriate for a young person like that? Or is 2 years really going to teach them their lesson, you know?
Well, to be honest, like, the length of time isn't really going to teach them any lesson for the most part, because the prison and jail system is flawed. Like, you kind of go there, but there's nothing really there to teach you what you did wrong and how to come about it. It's kind of like, all right, it's like an extended timeout, but then no one ever really comes and says, hey, this is how you fucked up, you know, let's work on you becoming a better person. You're just kind of just left there to fester with your own thoughts.
I think Henry Rollins was kind of talking about that, and you're right. And just so the readers know, we're referring to an article written by Henry Rollins in the LA Weekly, which you can also find at his website, which I think is henryrollins.com, but I'm not sure.
Yeah, or just Google Henry Rollins, Steubenville, Ohio, and it'll come up.
Chris, you have any other thoughts on the situation?
Nah, not really.
All right, well, let's move on to our last story, which is much happier. Band Restorations, which are from Philadelphia and are rapidly becoming very big on punk news, have just released, I think, the first song off their new album. The new album is called LP2, and here's what the frontman, John Luden, had to say about the track. The track is called Civil Inattention. He said, Civil Inattention is a favorite of mine off the record. This was – oh, I was reading that as he was saying it like secretively. Like off the record, Civil Inattention is a favorite of mine. But what he's saying is on the record, Civil Inattention – you see what I'm saying? Are you guys there?
Yeah.
Yeah. You like kind of cut out for a second. Oh, yeah. And I was like –
when I read this – this is how dumb I am. See, he said Civil Inattention is a favorite of mine off the record. I was reading a comma there. And he's saying, like, between you and I, but that's not what he's saying at all. All right, let me start
over. Oh, that is kind of funny.
So let me start over. Of the Restorations, frontman John Luden said, Civil Inattention is a favorite of mine off the record. This was a great exercise for us trying as many variations as possible of these essentially the same riff and chord progression. I think Dave is doing some really great guitar work on here, too. Lyrically, the song is about taking yourself – talking yourself into not engaging with people along your daily commute. It's playing that game where you try to make it to the subway without anyone talking to you, and the cartoonish goons you slowly train yourself into seeing at every turn. What do you guys think of the jam? And more importantly, is Restorations the next big punknews.org band? I think they are.
I haven't listened to the song yet. It's something I'll probably end up getting around to by the end of the day. I've heard some Restorations, and I don't hate it, but I don't love it. But maybe this new record will win me over, because I've had tons of bands like that where I, like, listened to it, and I was like, eh, meh. And then all of a sudden now, like, I love them, and it's like I have to see them at every show and, like, you know, like, buy all their merch. Cause I'm, like, the first time I saw Joyce Manor, I didn't care. But granted, the first time I saw them was, like, in 08, and they were an acoustic two-piece. So who knows?
I saw him in a basement back in 2008. I was a fan. No, I'm kidding.
Well, I do it. Like, I mean, like, if you really want me to, like, do the whole pissing contest, I saw them back when they were the English work standard, so Google that.
Oh, yeah. Well, I saw them when they were in daycare. How about that?
So did I. We went to the same daycare.
I saw them I saw them during conception. How about that?
How'd you even manage that?
I was looking through the window with binoculars.
How old were you when that happened?
Well, I don't know. They're only, like, 20, right?
Nah, I think the oldest one, I think that's Matt. He's like 28 or 29, granted, one of them is super young. One of them's like 20, barely turned 21, but everyone else is like between, like, their mid to late 20s.
Chris, you're a Restorations fan, right?
It's weird. I'm not a huge fan of the band. I know.
Oh, I
know.
You're a maniac.
No, I'm not. I know several of the guys from other endeavors and have, I guess, maintain good friendships with them from those endeavors, but Restorations himself, they're okay. I'm not crazy like a lot of people. It's Justin who is like the Restorations like maniac. Yep, he's the guy who like goes ballistic about them. I'm just kind of, yeah, they're not bad. They do their thing. Dan Redbeard is one of the greatest dudes alive, and I love him.
Is he in the band?
Yeah. They're okay. I'll listen to the new record and dig it. I don't think they're the next big punk news band, only because I think we're getting wider and wider with what people listen to now, that you don't have the same clicky bands that we used to have, where it was like, you know, it went from, for example, I don't know, you know, Gaslight Anthem was one of them at one time. Joyce Manor was, I don't know. Speaking of that, I don't get the Joyce Manor thing. I really don't. I'm sorry.
It's because you're old.
I've listened to it. It's just noise. It's not good.
I'm with you, Chris. I mean, I don't think they're bad or anything, but I've seen them twice. I know a lot of people like them, but I just thought they were pretty good. You know, I don't get it. And honestly, just because I think my ears haven't trained themselves to listen to that kind of.
I'm being harsh. They're not bad, but I don't see how people like shit themselves over them.
Yeah, you guys are just old. It's okay. I get it. It's no,
Armando, you can tell us. Like, I'm not arguing with you. I'm asking you. What is so great about Joyce Manor?
You know, I don't know. I feel like I'm biased because I'm also friends with them.
Oh, are
but,
you?
But yeah,
I'm not trying to be a dick here. But what does that black arm tattoo mean that I see on so many people?
I don't know. I don't have the courage to ask. I feel like that's rude. That's like, you know, if you see somebody who's missing his legs, you don't really ask how you lost them.
Well, I'm going to ask a question out there to all the punk news listeners. Is I've seen this at actually mostly hardcore shows. Like, when I say hardcore, I mean like metallic hardcore shows as opposed to like punk hardcore shows. Is dudes with like entire arms, just one black sleeve tattoo. I've seen that like on like at least 12 people, which means like there's at least like 1,000 people with that tattoo. So if anybody knows what that means, email the answer to podcast@punknews.org, because it's driving me crazy. I think it's like a secret organization.
The Illuminati.
I think it's the punk rock Illuminati. And with that, I think we'll wrap up the podcast. We're going to play an audio clip from Eugene Robinson talking about beating people up. Eugene Robinson is a really interesting guy. He was in the band Whipping Boy, and then he was in the band Oxbow, and after that he was in the band called Blackface. He's a really big, crazy guy, and those bands are big, crazy bands, and he was known for getting in fistfights at shows. Well, as it turns out, Eugene Robinson is also a competitive fighter, in that he, like, fights people, like, in competition. I actually interviewed him last year. You can check out that interview at punknews.org, where I went to his fight club and basically saw him fight and beat people up. It was wild. He's got a book out called Everything You Wanted to Know About Ass Kissing But Were Afraid to Ask Because You Were Scared You Would Get Your Ass Kicked for Asking. It's a hilarious book where Eugene talks about why he likes to fight and what kind of fighting he does. There's an audio version of the book out on Hydra Head Records. We're going to play just a clip of that audio book. It's a gigantic audio book. I think it's two or three whole CDs, two CDs of basically him reading his thoughts and his ideas. This is a track where he talks to his therapist about why he likes beating people up. This is just a short clip of the track called My Shrink Asks a Few Questions in a Thinly Veiled Attempt at Seeing If He's Got the Stones to Take Me On. And this is Eugene Robinson from his audio book, Fight Everything You Ever Wanted to Know About Ass Kicking But Were Afraid You Would Get Your Ass Kicked for Asking.
Now, Big Irish Joe Donnelly, my shrink, asked a few questions in a thinly veiled attempt at seeing if he's got the stones to take me on. We know you like to fight, but why? Short answer. It's expressively honest. There's no real equivocation in an elbow to the jaw. There's no pussyfooting about the gray shadings of meaning inherent in civilized and power-shielded discourse. And it's a potent tie-in to our immediate and ever-present animal. Now, words are all well and good, and like the meat puppets say, well, who needs action when you got words? But in a land where words have ceased having meaning, this will have to do nicely. You know, the problem here is largely that this has become the model for our national discourse. In other words, fighting has become trendy. Not the stuff in the ring, which I will love no matter what, but the idea that words are an embarrassment used only by those who don't know how, can't, or are afraid to fight. Remember this, I choose to fight. And I do so not because I have no other choice, but because it's frequently in the wide and rainbow palette of personal expressions, the expression that people seem to want most to see. So my reasons for wanting to fight are, part Florence Nightingale. It's not unusual for me to be thanked by the beaten. If not right away, then later. I'm not a bully, and only fight as a last recourse. And if some ass clown has been pushing and pushing, well, he's thanking me for teaching him a lesson as gently as a hardhead like him is likely to notice. Part Ted Bundy. Vast wellsprings of rage, the sources of which go back to early life, Freudian shit having everything to do with every single existential and psychosocial, psychosexual, psychosocial issue you can ever imagine. Not to politicize my way around this, but I've got a very, very complicated relationship with other humans. Part Zorba the Greek. I like to fight. Yes, but what about the moral and legal repercussions? Asked Joe Donnelly. Well, look, if you're a reactive fighter, not a bully, the law affords you a good deal of latitude. I mean, under the rubric of defending yourself, you can get away with murder, literally. Also, being well-dressed, sober, and articulate can be a great saving grace and a license for the aforementioned murder.
And thanks again for listening to the Punk News Podcast. As always, the statements expressed by the people on the Punk News Podcast are the statements of the people, making them exclusively. They in no way represent the statements or opinions of punknews.org or anybody affiliated with punknews.org or anybody's mother that's affiliated with punknews.org. We want to thank all the bands that were appearing tonight. We want to thank Lee Scratch Perry and Narnak Records. We want to thank Eugene Robinson of Oxbow. And we also want to thank the band that Andrew Waterfield played, which was called... Drum roll, please. Her parents. Other than that, thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.